All right, everybody, welcome to Chan's Logic. This is episode 20. I've got Jeffrey Sass here with me. Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, that's how you pronounce it. Sass, just like it sounds. Very, very sassy. Short and sassy.
So welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Chandler. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you on the podcast. Let's start out. Just tell me a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, sure. So I am pretty much a marketer is how I always think of myself. Currently, I'm the CMO of .club domains. So we're one of the new domain name extensions. So instead of a domain name that ends in .com or .org or .biz, you can now get one that ends in .club, C-L-U-B. So that's my primary business. I've had a long and varied career. I've been in the entertainment industry, which we'll talk about when I get to my book. And I've been in the video and computer game industry. I've been in the mobile technology industry. And now I'm in the domain name industry. And always, you know, really as a creative marketer. And I recently wrote a book called Everything I Know About Business and Marketing I Learned from the Toxic Avenger, which goes back to a seven-year stint I had making low-budget action horror films and all the different lessons I learned from that.
Yeah, let's talk about that a little bit. What do you think all the correlations are between the movie industry you were in and everything you learned and how it built what you have today and brought you to writing the book about what you learned from Toxic Avenger?
Yeah, so it's really interesting. So making movies, first of all, it's like there's a lot of similarities between making a movie and starting a business. And really every film production is like it's like a startup on steroids, because you do everything you do in a startup. You've got to, you know, you kind of come up with an idea or a concept. You know, in this case, it's for a movie, but that's the same as a product or a service. You've got to raise money. You've got to staff up. You know, you have to have a plan. You have to have a strategy. You have to create a culture around executing that strategy. And it all happens in a very concentrated period, especially with the low budget independent films that we used to make. You know, it was typically a 6 to 8 week production period. And it's like almost like going away to summer camp, you know, with a group of people that you're suddenly thrown into this mess with, and you have to come out of it with a finished movie. So there's a lot of similarities and a lot of great lessons I learned. And I don't know if your listeners know much about Troma, but it's kind of an interesting company. And that's why I had all these lessons that carried forward, you know, 20 years later. Troma is probably the world's oldest independent film studio. It's over 40 years old. And it has this wild and crazy reputation for making these kind of wacky, crazy action, horror, comedy films like The Toxic Avenger. And The Toxic Avenger is this hideously deformed creature of superhuman size and strength. He was a 98-pound weakling that fell into a vat of toxic chemicals and then turned into this kind of crazy, violent, in the original movie, superhero. And as a company, Troma has developed a huge and loyal fan base. A lot of very well-known actors and actresses and directors got their start at Troma because basically, as a low-budget studio, we had no money, but a lot of people wanted to work on making movies to gain the experience, and they would essentially work for free or for peanuts or maybe a sandwich with that peanut, with those peanuts. But a lot of chances for people to get some real experience, but not really get paid very much.
Yeah, that's exciting. I think I tell a lot of people sometimes you've got to put yourself in that position to where you have to give a little bit to get the experience or to make the connections, to meet the people, to be able to do the things you want to do later on. And sometimes these things are just a bridge to each piece that we want to attain next. And you said something interesting about how you have to build up each movie and how each movie is its own individual thing and has its own individual startup mentality. Let's talk a little bit about how you go about and you build culture into each one of these individual movies. How do you take that and figure out what the culture is and embrace it and teach everybody to realize it?
Yeah, it's a great question. And there's a lot of different ways that Troma achieved this really strong sense of teamwork, you know, on the set. First of all, every Troma movie was called a Troma team release. So this idea of being a part of a team was very important. There were three rules of production, and there were signs all over the place when we were in productions that had these three rules on them. The first rule was safety to people, right? Watch out for everyone's safety. The second rule was safety to property. be respectful of the property, especially as a low budget production. We were often getting permission as a favor to film in someone's backyard or in someone's house or in some city location. So you have to be respectful of the property. And then the third rule was to make a good film. And it was really important that everyone, no matter what their role was aware of and respectful of those, you know, rules of production. And that created a sense of common cause and common purpose. And I think when it comes to corporate culture, purpose is really important. You know, there's a lot of books written about culture. There are all these, culture consultants and everything else. But many companies make the mistake and they think culture is all about, you know, beer and pizza on Friday nights, you know, or being able to wear shorts to work and a t-shirt. But that's not what culture is about, right? Culture is about having a common purpose and having everyone on the team understand their role and how they're contributing to that common purpose. You know, a lot of company cultures, even some of the more famous ones, are almost cult-like. And that's a big mistake because in a cult, people tend to follow blindly. But in a really good culture, people follow with purpose. Everyone understands that purpose. And one of the ways we used to create a great culture very quickly, making a movie, and I think you can apply this to any business. There's an old saying that's often attributed to Mark Twain that says you should start every day by swallowing a frog. And the idea behind that is, you know, if you start every morning by swallowing a frog, after that disgusting act, anything else the day throws at you is going to be easy in comparison, right? So you want to start with something hard. And we took that to heart when we made these movies. We often would start every production with something really difficult on the first day of filming. Like we'd start with a stunt or some big action scene or something that was really complicated. And that forced everyone right on day one to come together as a team, to concentrate really hard. It weeded out all the weak links, right? On day two, there are always fewer people than there were on day one because day one was really hard. And it created a sense of camaraderie and teamwork that might have otherwise taken weeks to develop because everyone had this sense of accomplishment. Hey, we did it. We accomplished this really tricky stunt right on day one. And I think that applies to anyone who's leading a team. You know, if you want to bring that team together very quickly and create that culture of cooperation and teamwork, start by doing something really difficult. Start by giving yourselves a chance to accomplish something really hard together right out of the gate. And I think that really works very effectively.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. It's when you bring these people together and you guys have that difficult experience, or you bring them together to experience something together where they have to work together and make sure everything's done right. They're a team. You create this culture of common experience. And with a culture of common experience, it brings everybody together and they feel like they've accomplished something together, they've been through something together, and now that they've made it through it, they can actually do all this stuff, they feel connected. And then I think it brings out the identity of each individual, and then it brings out the kind of the brand of each individual, and all of those mesh together to create this really unique atmosphere that portrays itself in a business or a movie or anything like that. And like you said earlier, I think it's really important to understand that it's not just going out and having fun with the team. It's not just like Pizza Fridays and all that stuff. It's everybody lives, eats, and breathes what's happening no matter what. It doesn't have to be fun. Even when things are not going so well or people aren't super pumped about it, they're still working together and the culture still comes together to create this one unique environment.
Yeah. And I think it's really important too for people to be passionate about what they do. And that's very different than the idea of pursuing your passion. You know, a lot of people always say, oh, you've got to pursue your passion. You've got to, you know, turn your passion into your dream job. And that's easy to say, but it's really hard to do, right? Almost all of us will have a job at some point in our career that we don't really love. It's not the perfect job, but you have to find something about it that you can be passionate about, something about it that you can really embrace and make your own, and that will make you successful no matter what it is. So when I was making these movies, you know, trauma movies are a unique quality. And to be honest, I personally wasn't such a big fan of their movies, right? It wasn't really my cup of tea. But I recognized that they did have lots of very loyal fans. So there were a lot of people out there who did like what we were brewing, even if I wasn't one of them. And I came to be very successful at it and very passionate about it, not because I wanted to watch these movies myself necessarily, but because A, I really loved the process of making movies. So I liked the process. I liked the teamwork. I liked the collaboration. So I liked making movies. And B, I really came to appreciate our fans and appreciate that we were making a particular kind of wild and crazy movie that appealed to our fans and that our fans really loved. So I became very passionate about working for the fans, about delivering to them the best possible trauma movie I could give them because I knew they would like it. So that's how I found my way to be passionate about it, even though I wasn't necessarily the audience myself for those films. And I think in any job, you can find something that you can be passionate about, and that's going to help make you successful.
Yeah, I think that's huge. A lot of people don't understand that the passion is the key to finding success and the key to making the money or finding the happiness or doing whatever specifically makes you happy. You have to have the passion first. And if you don't pursue the passion, you're going to end up doing something you hate or one of the people who says they're in a dead-end job. And another point that I think that was really good that you just made was it's not about, I think we're moving away from what we call a brand-centric environment where the brand is the most important thing and moving into a customer-centric environment. And you hit this the nail on the head with this when you said it's about the customer experience and it's about providing something that the end result is the optimal experience for the people who are going to consume it. And if that's the most important function of the brand, then you create this brand that's entirely based around the perception of the consumer, and the consumer perception is what really matters to you versus the brand being like the center stone. Now we're moving to where the customer is the key piece and the key thing that's always on our mind that we always think about. And it's really the only thing we care about when we're making anything that they're going to consume.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I think it's really important for businesses today to embrace their customers and shine a light on them. And I know you talk a lot about social media and digital marketing at times. You know, in my day job, when I'm not writing these crazy books at Dot Club, you know, a lot of our strategy, especially our social media strategy, involves shining a light on our customers, on businesses that are using a Dot Club name. And really, you know, in enhancing and amplifying what they're doing. If they make a cool video about their company, we'll share that. And it gives us great content, and it lets us talk about our business without talking about ourselves, right? By highlighting our customers and highlighting people who are actually using our product, in this case, a domain name. And I think that's a strategy that most businesses can do. Really, you want to highlight your customers and your end users and make them the stars.
I think that's a great point. You have to get in the mentality that it's not about you, it's about them. And then in addition to that, you get the mentality that how you want to make them feel special. And the best way to make customers feel special is when a brand showcases and highlights them specifically or puts them in an environment to where they feel like the brand actually cares about them. And I think that's how you really build that emotional connection and that relationship with customers. And I often talk about like our three pillars to great content, and that's you have to motivate and inspire people. You have to educate people, and you have to make them laugh a little bit.
Yep.
And all those three things, I think you create that brand relationship you need to make the consumer want to follow you through anything.
Yep. And you know, well, we certainly made people laugh a lot in these movies, not always intentionally, but they were definitely a lot of funny. You know, at Troma too, one of the great lessons I learned too had to do with delegating, right? And just really letting people sink or swim. Because we were hiring all these people who generally were inexperienced and underpaid, a lot of times you just had to give someone their first chance. You had people doing stuff that they'd never done before. You know, people getting behind the camera and directing second unit that never did it before. Wardrobe teams, you know, creating costumes in the middle of the night that they've never done it before. And then the next day we're using those costumes and props and sets in the movies. And I think it's an opportunity to give people a chance to rise to the occasion. You still need to monitor what they're doing. You know, you have to inspect what you expect. So you can't just give someone free rein without paying attention to it. On the other hand, you can't do everything yourself, especially in making a movie. You know, it's very much a collaborative process. And so you have to give people a chance and give them the opportunity in the room to fail, as long as the failure is not going to be something that's going to, you know, shut down your production or be critical. But let them make some mistakes and learn from those mistakes. And what we found is, you know, some people will completely F up. I don't know if I'm allowed to curse on your show or not, but some people will completely mess up, you know, and fall apart and quit and go away, you know, upset that they couldn't handle the pressure. A lot of people will just squeak by, but then a few people really rise to the occasion and become superstars and really emerge, you know, from being given that opportunity to do something they've never done before. So I think the best way to learn is by doing something you've never done before And as a leader or manager in business, the best way to be a good leader or manager is to give people who work with you the opportunity to learn. Give them the chance to do something they've never done before. So delegate something, keep an eye on it, but give them a chance to make some mistakes. And sure enough, we made plenty of mistakes making these movies, but a lot of people, you know, went on to have phenomenal careers.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I think it's, as a leader, you have to, especially at what I see with small businesses, is you have to at some point allow your employees to take charge and allow your employees or your contractors or whoever you have under you to do the tasks you needed them to do. And you need to give them the leeway, the flexibility, and the capabilities to go out and try it. And if they mess up, I think that's a good time and a good point to be a mentor and to take them back and say, all right, this is what you did really well. This is what you could have done better on. What are you going to do next time? And then you can work with them to make a plan of action. So that way, each time they do something new, they always have you as a mentor to look at to say, okay, what did I do well? How can I improve? What did I not do so well?
Exactly. You have to give them guidance. And the job of a good leader and a good manager is to make their team look like a star, you know, to make their team succeed, right? Not to make themselves succeed, make their team succeed. Because if they're the manager and their team succeeds, then they've succeeded, right? And in filmmaking, you know, the director, he's essentially the CEO of that production, right? And a good director knows how to delegate really well. A good director can't do everything himself. He knows how to have great department heads, a good DP, you know, someone running the costumes. He's got all these people around him, or she has all these people around her that, you know what they're doing. And then a good CEO, a good director knows how to delegate the task and oversee them and keep everything in line. And I think what's interesting about making movies, and that should apply to more businesses than it does, is, you know, when you're making a film, everything is laid out. You know, you have your business plan. Let's say your business plan is the script, right? That's the screenplay for the movie. But your strategy is actually your production schedule. Because when you're making a film, literally every day is broken down on a schedule board into exactly what's needed for that day. Who are the actors we need? What's the set? What's the location? What costumes and props are required? You know, how much film do we need? Which cameras do we need? All that stuff is prepared and laid out in advance. And you're really living on a day-to-day basis, right? Most businesses don't do that. Most businesses, unfortunately, don't have the pressures of, you know, a location that at 5 o'clock at the end of that day, you can never go back to again. So everything you need from that location must absolutely positively be shot that day. In business, most of the time, we have leeway to, you know, just go through each day thinking we're accomplishing a lot, but in actuality, are we really pushing that strategy forward? You know, when making a film, it's very clear day by day what you need to do to get to the end game, which is to complete your product, complete a finished movie, right? So I think there's a lot businesses can learn about trying to structure their days better and structure their priorities better. You know, what are the things that really are important? And most of us spend many of our days, and I'm guilty of this too, doing stuff. We're really busy. We get stuff done. But are we getting the things done that actually really matter in getting our business from point A to point B?
Yeah, that's a good point. I see a lot of businesses who don't necessarily have any sort of plan of action. And I think it's important to have a long-term plan so you know where you're going to be at 12, 24, 36 months. And that's always going to evolve and change radically. But at least you have an idea. And then you break that down into your 9 month, your 6 month, your 3 month, and then your daily tasks. And if you can set yourself up with some sort of task management capabilities and say, all right, these are my tasks today, you get them all done, and you don't. And if you don't, the businesses can look back and say, what happened? Why didn't I accomplish this? And they can say, oh, wow, I wasted 3 hours doing nothing. And I could have delegated this off to someone else who could have done this better than I can. And I think there's two big things here. It's understanding the long-term flow of what you need to do, breaking that flow down into micro flows, and then understanding who you can delegate it to save time for yourself so you're not always just working on one thing inside the business all the time.
Yeah, and not only do you have to have a plan, but you have to have a plan B. Even when you're making B movies, we always had a plan B. And it's really important too, because as an independent low-budget studio, you know, we didn't have money to do things inside a set or a studio. That costs a lot of money. So most of the time you film on location, right? So you're filming outdoors, you're filming in parks, you're filming in locations that you got permission to film in, and you're at the mercy of Mother Nature, right? So if you have a scheduled day to film outdoors, you always had to have an ulterior plan with an indoor location in case the weather would turn bad, right? You always had to have, okay, if we can't shoot this scene because the weather gets bad, we can go to this location that's indoors, that's a few blocks away, and know what the plan is to get something else in the can that day, you know, when weather or some other thing interferes. So you always had to have every single day had a plan A, but there was always a plan B. We always knew exactly what we would do if, you know, it started to rain and we couldn't finish shooting in that location or something went wrong. There was always a backup plan, and that's very important. Even with a low budget studio like Troma, our days were very organized in that fashion.
Yeah, that's a great point. If you have a plan, but then you don't have a backup plan and your whole world crumbles when your initial plan doesn't go well, I think you're going to fall apart in business. It's no matter what you plan, you're always going to need to have some sort of contingency to fall back on when things don't go the way you want it to go. And as a leader, if you crumble and fall apart, your team's going to see that and your team's going to crumble and fall apart. So I think as a leader, if you have the plan and when you see it, like shit go haywire, you're capable of making a pivot and shifting immediately, your team's not even going to know what happened. And they're going to see you as the leader who is capable of pushing them forward and continuously making sure they were on the right path. And I think that's another good point too, is as a leader, you don't get to be emotional like your team. I mean, you don't get to talk about problems and issues and all that stuff. It's your job to analyze and interpret and understand what's going on and then push that forward so your team's always headed in the right direction.
Yes, but you can also, you know, you can talk about things that have gone wrong and you can certainly try to turn it into a learning experience. And when something messes up, you want to make sure everyone understands why and how that happened so we don't make this mistake again the next day. You know,
yeah.
You know, when someone forgets to put the camera in film in the camera and we spend an hour shooting a scene only to find out none of it was recorded, you know, you want them to learn and set up processes and systems that mistake doesn't happen again.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. You want to set up like team meetings, like this is what went well, this is what we screwed up, this is what we're going to do to fix it next time. And then you allow the team to think critically too and say, all right, what did we do wrong? What could we have done better? How do we fix this next time if something did go wrong?
Yeah, meetings is a good suggestion too. You know, in the filmmaking process, we would often have huddles, oftentimes late at night, you know, at the very end of the night before everyone went to bed. You might have the department heads get together in one of the hotel rooms or wherever we were staying during filming and just quickly review what the plan is, what the schedule is for tomorrow. Make sure that we knew where everyone was, who's going to be picking up the actors and actresses at what time, and who's making sure that the food's coming, and is the camera truck safe and ready to show up with all the cameras and the film and everything else, and just kind of do a quick overview of what's planned for the next day while there's still time to fix something. If someone says, oh my gosh, I forgot we needed you know, an umbrella in that scene, we need to go out and get an umbrella now and make sure we have that for tomorrow, or whatever the prop or whatever the thing might be.
Yeah, that's a good idea too. I'm a big fan of, instead of super long meetings with staff, I'm a big fan of short daily huddles. Like everybody, it's a 15-minute daily huddle. This is what we have planned for the day. This is what we have planned for the next day. And then if you do that on a daily basis or like 2 to 3 times a week, I think your team likes that a lot better and tends to react a lot better than being sitting through like an hour-long meeting.
Yeah, and it helps keep everyone on the same page. You know, if you review what you're going to be doing that day, you know, some people who may not have been focused will be more focused after that. And it just it's a good practice. Yeah. You know, and a lot of the stuff, you know, making movies, a lot of crazy stuff can go wrong, but a lot of fun can happen too. But another good lesson and a funny story is, you know, you have to remember that everyone's expendable. You know, and in business, I think it's a good lesson for people to learn, even people at a senior level. You know, oftentimes get a little bit full of themselves and forget the fact that literally everyone's expendable. And in the kinds of movies we were making, you're especially expendable when you're wearing a mask because no one could see who's under that mask. So we had a, you know, in one of the Toxic Avenger sequels, we had one of the actors who was playing the Toxic Avenger at one point got a little bit full of themselves and really started to think they were a little bit too big for their ripped and torn toxic britches. And it was pretty easy to replace them because you just needed another big, bulky, muscular guy who wore the same mask. And in fact, we used multiple versions of the Toxic Avenger where the special effects team, they could have a mask and just put it on one of their guys and they could be off doing special effects while we were shooting something else. You know, there were a lot of cost efficiencies to having your lead character be someone who's behind a mask. And all you could really see are the whites of their eyes and their teeth. So you have to remember, everyone is expendable, no matter what role you're in. You have to be respectful of your job.
And that combats complacency. Like, yes, your job's important, and we like what you do. You're great at it. But if you get complacent, your job is expendable. It's replaceable. You're not this person who we can't live without. And I think as a leader, you have to understand that as well, because if you give too much to people and they start to take advantage of that, then you lose control of your team. And if you lose control of your team, you can't manage anything.
Yeah. And kind of the flip side to that too is that if you are dedicated to what you do, and if you find that passion we talked about earlier, and if you are a good team player in most businesses, then you can accomplish anything and you can move up the ranks and you can gain new responsibilities. And if you're willing to raise your hand, you know, one of the things I also learned at Troma is to be willing to raise your hand, even if it's for something you've never done before. When we were, we converted miraculously this Toxic Avenger character that was this bloody, gory, disgusting superhero from an R-rated movie. We actually successfully turned it into a Saturday morning cartoon show. So we took this R-rated character and turned them into the Toxic Crusaders, which became a popular cartoon series. And when we were doing the Toxic Crusaders, we had all these companies approaching us who wanted to handle our licensing and merchandising. They wanted to do, you know, toy deals and pajamas and comic books like they did for the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And every one of these licensing agents wanted a third. I mean, that was pretty much the standard deal. So they would get a third of whatever they generated by licensing deals for toys and games and, you know, et cetera, clothing, t-shirts, pajamas. So at one point we kind of looked at it and said, look, third is a lot, you know, to give away. And this is not, you know, this is not rocket science. We know the characters really well. And I literally just raised my hand and said, you know, why don't we just do it ourselves? I'll do it. I'll go out and talk to the manufacturers and try to figure out this business and we'll save ourselves a third. And so we just did. And we started a licensing division and that went on to represent not only our own properties, but other properties, including Reading Rainbow, which was an Emmy Award winning show on PBS. So, you know, you have to be willing to be open to new opportunities and to raise your hand to try something that you've never done before when that opportunity arises. I think that's really important.
Yeah, I think that's a great concept. It's don't be afraid to go out and try new things, to make new industries, to make new standards for the industry, and to be able to challenge the currently accepted practices. I think the people who do that are the ones who are ultimately the most successful at what they do because they weren't afraid to go out there and change something or try something different or be a little bit unique.
Yeah. And look for opportunities to you know, you may be faced with unexpected opportunities to add some element to your business that you hadn't anticipated. You know, we never thought we'd be in the business of licensing our characters for t-shirts and sneakers and comic books, but the opportunity arose and we jumped on it, you know, as opposed to saying, oh, no, we don't do that. We just make movies. You know, we're not interested in licensing. You know, we had an open mind to accept a new opportunity when it arose.
Exactly. Let's talk about your book a little bit. So everything you learned, you know about marketing, you learned from the Toxic Avenger.
Tell me
about it and let's go over it.
Yeah. So, I mean, a lot of the stories I've been sharing as we've been talking, you know, are based on things that are covered in the book. But I spent 7 years working for Troma back when I was much younger. And a fun fact, if you're a fan of Guardians of the Galaxy and those movies, James Gunn, who is the writer and director of those movies, very successful. So he always credits Troma for giving him his start in the film business. And when I quit Troma to go work in the video game business back in 1994, they hired James Gunn to replace me. So if you're a fan of the Guardians of the Galaxy movies, you should buy and read my book as a way of thanking me for helping to give James Gunn his entree. The truth of the matter is he's far more talented than I would ever be, and I'm sure he would have had the same success whether he worked for Troma or not, but he certainly had a good run there. And our paths, you know, we were like two ships passing in the night. I left and then he joined, so it was kind of funny.
Yeah, that's exciting. I like the concept of the book and the story of the studio and how everything builds up. I think it correlates really well to marketing for any sort of business, a small business, a medium-sized business, even large-scale businesses can learn from it, especially the culture aspect. A lot of people have these culture-first philosophies or businesses, but they don't necessarily understand how to bridge that and how to teach the leadership, all that stuff. And a lot of that stems from the way you not only market your business externally, but it's internal marketing with your employees.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Internal marketing is sometimes the most important marketing you can do. At Troma, it was really interesting, and there's a chapter in the book about it. We had very strict rules about every single correspondence, whether it was a letter or an email or whatever, and no matter who it was from, anyone in the company, from the founder to the interns, if you were starting a letter, it had to say, "Greetings from Tromaville." Right? Every single letter that came out of that company started with "greetings from Tromaville." And you had to say "we." You were never allowed to say "I." Literally, we had to train everyone. It was always "we." Doesn't matter what you were talking about. Hey, we hope to see, you know, if you were making a lunch appointment with someone for next Tuesday, you would be saying, "We hope to see you next Tuesday," or "we look forward." It's never "I," never "I." And that was strictly enforced. And what was really interesting about that, as you pointed out, Chandra, internally and externally. So internally, once you got used to doing that, it really makes you feel like you're part of a team. It's really much more genuine to say "we," because the truth of the matter is, unless you are a sole proprietor, if you're in business, you're part of a team. If you're an employer and you have an employee, you're part of a team. If you're an employee and you have an employer, you're part of a team. And if you're part of a team, there are very few things that any one individual actually achieves solely by themselves. There's always contributions from other team members. So when you say, "I did this and I did that," you're really being a little bit disingenuous. Yes, you might have had the lead, but you had help from other people, right? It was "we." And if you're a leader, if you're a manager, when you say "we," it's a great way to share the love with your team. It's a great statement about how you lead when you say "we" instead of "I." You know, you don't want to go up there in front of the group and say, "I did this and I did that." And everyone else who helped you is sitting there thinking, "Well, what am I, chopped liver?" So I think that rule of always using "we" instead of "I" was really important. And then externally, it made us special because whenever someone got correspondence from Troma, it was different. It was different than anything they were getting from any other company because it started out with "greetings from Tromaville," and it was we did this, we want that, we love you, we this, we that, no matter who it was from. And I think that really resonated with the outside world as well as within the company itself. And even to the point where even though we were making these crappy movies, proudly making these crappy movies, we were treated very fairly by the media and by the press. Like, they never really ripped apart our movies too much, and they were very generous. Even very famous reviewers like Roger Ebert were very generous in their reviews of Troma movies. And I attribute a lot of that to this culture, to the fact that we were very authentic, but we took ourselves seriously, but we didn't, I mean, we took our movies seriously. We took making movies seriously, but we didn't take ourselves too seriously. We knew we were having fun with it. We had this, you know, "greetings from Tromaville" and this whole little world we created. And I think the outside world really liked that a lot and really responded very favorably to that. And it was a good lesson. Even today in business, I feel sometimes slightly guilty when I say "I" a lot. Like, if I'm in a meeting, I really do find myself consciously trying to say "we did this and we did that," and really including my team as much as I possibly can in things. And I sometimes cringe when I see someone else stand up in a meeting and say, "I did this and I did that," when I know and everyone else in the room knows that there are a lot of other people there who contributed.
Yeah, those are good points. And as a leader, it's not about you. It's about everyone who encompasses what you do. And if you're the lead on a team, if you give credit to your people, they're more likely to follow you, to support you, and to back you through anything. And if you realize that your team's more important than you are, that's when you become a really good leader. And that's when your team's ready to follow you to the ends of the earth. When your team talks really well about you, they tell other people that they love what you do. And the other thing is, when you build that culture, like when people walk into our gym, Stone Age Fuel, it's "welcome to Stone Age Fuel," where the streets are paved with gold. And nobody else says anything like that. Nobody does anything like that because it's culturally something that we developed, we created, we answer the phone like that. Our staff's in the back yelling and screaming it because they enjoy it. And it's creating that uniqueness around what you do. And we started some segments that we call like "Minute with the Interns." It has nothing to do with health and fitness. It's just a couple of our interns on camera for a minute, just talking back and forth, being ridiculous, but we find that that's such a big piece of our culture. It's our most popular video series. And
yep.
Everybody reacts to it. Everybody laughs about it. And it trumps everything else we do.
Yeah, because it's authentic, right? It's authentic. It's real. And it gives people a peek behind the scenes. And that's really what I wanted to accomplish with this book was like take these, everyone's interested in making movies. It's just one of these things that I think everyone, you know, in the back of their mind would love to be involved in being in or being behind the scenes of making a movie. And I thought there was an opportunity here to kind of give everyone a peek behind the scenes and kind of a look under the skirt, see how these crazy movies were made. And at the same time, pull out of that lessons that are really applicable to any business, not just the movie making business. And I think, you know, things are easier to learn and things are more fun when there's a story behind it. So a lot of these stories are kind of funny. There's some crazy stuff that went on. But I think the lessons are real. You know, it says on the book, you know, real business and marketing tips learned from making classic cult movies. And that's really the idea behind the book. So if you're a fan of movies, you'll enjoy it. If you're a fan of Troma, you'll enjoy it. But if you're a business person, you're interested in marketing, you're interested in startups and entrepreneurship, I think there are some really, you know, legitimate lessons in there presented in kind of a fun and entertaining way. And it's easy to read, short chapters, you know, a lot of chapters are only 1 and 2 pages, so you can knock it out really fast. And I think it's a lot of fun and I've had a pretty good reaction so far. So I'm really happy with how it turned out.
Yeah, definitely. I always say be real, be human, be social. And it's true to that. And I read your book most of the way through. And I think it's really good. It's real. It's real life stories. It's real life scenarios. And if you tell the story, you connect really well with people and people want to connect with you because they see you as a person versus just an entity. And so where do you think, where can people find your book?
Yeah. So you can get the book on Amazon. It's available both in paperback and a Kindle version. You can either search for me or the book's name on Amazon, or to make it easy, you can just simply go to www.toxicavenger.marketing, and that will take you right to my page on amazon.com. And we've got a Facebook page for the book and a website and everything else. And dot marketing, you know, I mentioned that my day job is as the CMO for dot club domains, one of the new domains. Dot marketing is another domain name. People don't realize you can have a domain that ends in dot marketing, but since the book is about Toxic Avenger and marketing, by having toxicavenger.marketing, it's really easy to remember. And that takes you right to the Amazon page. So that's another marketing tip, is to use a memorable domain name. And you have a lot of choices now with all these new extensions that makes it easy for people to find things. So I'm using that as a shortcut to the Amazon page, which is a URL that you really can't share, right?
Yeah, I like it. It gives it a certain amount of uniqueness as well.
Yeah.
So before we wrap this up, I like to end it with just if you give 3 things people could do to help their business, give them some immediate value, what do you think the top 3 things they should do?
Oh, gosh. Well, one thing I always talk about is listen, right? It's really important to listen. And that includes listening to your employees if you're the boss, or listening to your coworkers, and also listening to your customers. You know, we have this powerful tool now with social media, where we can go out there, and a lot of people and brands do it backwards in that they use it only as a broadcast channel and forget the fact that you actually have the opportunity to be the fly on the wall of millions of conversations and conversations about you and your product and your service. And there's so much to be learned there by just simply listening and hearing what's being said. So I think listening is really important. And I think, you know, some of the lessons we talked about in terms of you know, delegating well, giving people opportunities to try new things is really important, and making sure you yourself are always trying new things. And don't be afraid to do something for the first time. Literally everyone who's an expert at something, you know, had the first time they had never done it before. Every famous Hollywood director, from James Gunn to Steven Spielberg, at one point in their career had never directed before. They all had a first time, right? So don't be scared to have a first time. Don't be scared to do something for the first time.
Love it. Thanks for coming on the Chan's Logic podcast. I think we had a lot of really good thoughts and ideas, and definitely encourage everybody to go check out the book and to read it and to support Jeffrey here.
Great.
A lot of good ideas and concepts. And thanks again for coming on the show.
Thank you, Chandler. It's a pleasure to be here. And thanks everyone again, toxicavenger.marketing, or you can find me at jeffreysass.com or at Sass on Twitter.
Perfect. And I will link this into the podcast notes as well.
Great. Thanks again.
You're welcome. Thank you.